The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Thanks as always for downloading Talk is Jericho. I've got part two of my amazing, emotional, deep conversation with my friend and former traveling partner, Chavo Guerrero, coming up. But first, we need to talk about Valentine's Day and what, if anything, you've done to prepare. What are you getting that special someone? I'm guessing nothing at this point, but that's okay. Y2J's got your back. I've got you covered. Check this out. Sherry's Berries. Two words that will ensure your Valentine's Day is the best one ever. Get your Valentine giant freshly dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries starting at $19.99. Or double the berries for just $10 more. All you got to do is use my code Jericho when you order. Trust me, you want some loving? You want some special treatment? Well, believe me, she's going to love these enormous strawberries dipped in white milk and dark chocolate and covered in chocolate chips, decorative swizzles, or nuts. My mouth is watering just thinking about them. And hey, that's the bonus. Order them for your Valentine, and I guarantee she'll share them with you. The only way to get this amazing deal, giant freshly dipped strawberries starting at $19.99 or double the berries for just $10 more, is to visit berries.com. That's berries.com. Click on the microphone in the top right corner and type in Jericho. That's J-E-R-I-C-H-O. And hey, keep listening because later on during the show, I'm going to tell you how you can win some Sherry's Berries for free.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Marvelous.
This is Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho. Starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. This is the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. I am Chris Jericho, and this is the debut of my brand new Friday show. Yes, the remedy for boredom is now twice a week, every Wednesday and every Friday. TGIF, full show. That stands for Thank God It's Friday, in case you don't know. Spread the word to all your friends that the show is now twice a week, Wednesday and Friday, due to popular demand, a.k.a. all of you, the Jerichoholics, who wanted to hear more Talk is Jericho after only 8 weeks. That is insane. I appreciate all of the love and affection. I can't live without your love and affection. I can't wait another night on my own. Anytime you get a chance to sing some Nelson, you know it's a good thing. I'm excited to be here. Can't you tell? Huh? Can't you tell? It's time to cue up the official Talk is Jericho theme song. Yes, a little lover boy just for you. Gotta have Mo Cowbell. And more Talk is Jericho. I'm excited, like I said, to have you here. I'm also excited to have Chavo Guerrero back for the second part of this amazing interview. The conversation gets a lot deeper and even more emotional than the last one. I know that's hard to believe, but trust me, you are not going to want to miss this. It's a must hear. It's a must listen. It's a must see. Even though you can't see it, I get a lot of tweets on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho from people. Much like you saying, I really enjoyed the show. I enjoyed watching the episode with Edge, or I enjoyed watching the episode with M. Shadows. It's like, probably got to rewrite your tweet because you didn't really watch it. Unless you just watched the picture of me on the screen with that smile on my face. Like, hi. Yeah, it's a podcast, so we just listen. But something that I was watching was American Horror Story, Coven. And I always get in trouble for talking about TV shows. So, okay, spoiler alert. If you don't want to hear what happens at the end of the show, at the end of the season, don't listen. I tweeted about it and I said, watched American Horror Story, got kind of lame. Here's the theme of the season. People live, people die, people come back to life, the end. And everyone's like, you spoiled it, you son of a bitch. You spoiled the show. And It's like, I didn't say anything. I just said they live, they die, they come back to life. And that's one of the things that started bugging me. When Horror Story first started, Coven, the third season, I was super into it. I remember telling you guys about when the one witch got taken out to the desert and put on the stake to get burned alive. And they had like this really funky Dr. John music behind it. Could have been the right place. Could have been the wrong time. Could have been the right place. Could have been the wrong time or whatever. And then she gets put on the stake and they light her on fire. And it was just, oh, this is so awesome. But then it's almost like American Horror Story jumped the stake after that. It just started getting really cheesy. Like a witch would die. And then like 5 minutes later, they'd bring her back to life. And it was just like, there's no reason why these people are dying. Like, life and death meant nothing in this season. Like even at the end, the one witch, Zoe, they're playing like this game where they disappear and they appear and they disappear and they appear and they disappear and they appear. And she appears like impaled on this wrought iron gate. So like, how did that happen? She was just running and she's like, look at me, I can appear. And I can disappear, and I'm over here now. And now I'm over here. And now I'm, oh, impaled on a gate. Ah, stupid. How did I do that? Stupid. Dead. 5 minutes later, back to life. Like, why did they do that? It didn't make any sense to me. It started becoming, like, really plot hole riddled. But the moment for me that it really got super cheesy, and this has always been kind of a pet peeve of mine, is when they were talking all season long about how Misty was a big fan of Stevie Nicks.
Stevie Nicks. In my hero.
That's Stevie Nicks for American Idol.
Stevie Nicks. The White Witch. The only witch before you I've ever known.
She's an actual witch?
Yes, the Stevie Nicks. Rhiannon. Rhiannon screamed like a bird in a flat. And, you know, that chick from Fleetwood Mac. So, they're always talking about her. And then finally, all the evil witches somehow are friends with this White Witch. And they bring her into the dormitory where the coven is to meet Misty. And the White Witch is Stevie Nicks. It just so happens that like they're friends with the White Witch. And if you're a dark witch, why would you be friends with the White Witch? It doesn't make any sense. If you're super evil, why are you friends with someone that's really good? Okay, for one. And for two, so Misty comes in and she sees Stevie Nicks. And it's like, oh my gosh. Ah. And she goes, hi, I'm Stevie Nicks.
You must be Misty. I'm Stevie Nicks.
And it's just like so wooden acting.
Is she all right?
Hi, I'm Stevie Nicks. And it's just like, it's just so out of place, like just stunt casting. You might as well have a neon sign going stunt casting, stunt casting. And I always hated when shows would do that. Like, why would Stevie Nicks be hanging out with the Black Witch Coven? And also, if she was, and the girl who she knows is a huge friend walks in, like, hi, I'm Stevie. Like, duh, obviously, obs. But I'm Stevie Nicks, just for the people watching the show who might not know who she is. Listen, if you're watching American Horror Story Coven and you don't know who Stevie Nicks is, get the hell out of the room. No need to introduce yourself. So it reminded me of like you know, on the Cosby Show when, you know, Theo, floozing, fleeping, flop, you have to do your homework. That's the worst Bill Cosby imitation ever. Let me try that again. Theo, you have to do your homework, fleezing, flopping, flu, jello. Never said I was an impressionist, ladies and gentlemen. Anyways, Theo would be getting in trouble, and Cosby would be sitting there, and you got to do your homework. Come on, Dad, and I don't want to do my homework. And suddenly you'd hear a... You'd be, hold on, Theo, let me get the door. You better do your homework. Fleas and flopping flu. And then he'd go and open the door, and it'd be, oh my goodness, it's American gold medalist Carl Lewis. And then you'd hear the studio audience... Like, why is Carl Lewis just showing up at Cosby's house, and why does he have to introduce him like that? It's American gold medalist Carl Lewis. And so Carl comes, hello, hey, Mr. Huxtable, my car broke down, and can I use your phone? And then Theo's like, and hi, I'm Carl Lewis. Oh, I love you, Carl Lewis. What are you doing? Oh, he's not doing his homework, fleas and flop and flu, jello, jello. And then Carl Lewis would say, listen, Theo, it's very important to stay in school and do your homework so you can be an Olympic gold medalist like me. And then they'd all shake hands and then like, hey, and then the students would clap. And then Cosby would call up the, you know, the mechanic and they'd come and save Carl Lewis and there they go. But it's like these horrible stunt castings, and Cosby's show was so bad. I remember another time. Was where Denise Cosby's daughter, she gets into a car accident with a limousine. And it's like, oh, my goodness, I'm so sorry for hitting this limousine. And the door opens and it's, oh, my goodness, it's multi-time Grammy winner Stevie Wonder. And the crowd applauds. You know, and it's like, hey, Denise, I felt that you hit my car. And it's like, Stevie, like, why? Like, what? Like, how is this booked? Like, who decides? Okay, listen, Cosby, we can get Stevie Wonder for the show. We'll get him, Fleas and Flob and Floop. Okay, but what do we do with him? Find a place for him, Fleas and Flob and Flop, Jello. So they get, you know, Stevie Wonder, put him in a limousine, and Denise hits him, and he gets out. And it's like, he doesn't have anything to do with the rest of the show. He's just there for a second.
Now, we are going to go now, okay?
No, just a minute. I knew you were coming in today, so I programmed something special for you. I hope you like it. No New Year's Day to celebrate.
Stunt casting. One of my biggest pet peeves. Remember when the Beach Boys were on Full House? Did you ever see that? How about the Full House renaissance that's coming back? The Full House guys on a TV commercial for yogurt. Full House guys on Jimmy Fallon. And Saget worse than ever. Coulier more annoying than ever. And John Stamos still smoking hot. Like, I'm a heterosexual guy, but I want to bathe with John Stamos. He's so hot. Like, to this day, he looks exactly the same. Anyways, little known fact that John Stamos is also a musician of Jesse and the Rippers and played bongos and sang backups with the Beach Boys. For real. Remember that song Kokomo? It's like really from like cocktails. Bermuda, Bahamas. Oh, I want to. What is it? No. It's San Diego, Jamaica. Ooh, I want to take you. Like, oh. Brian Wilson, please come back to the Beach Boys and kill these stupid lyrics. So then if you watch the video for Kokomo, Stamos is in the back playing the bongos. Okay, I know that's really obscure. And then they came on to Full House. And once again, Jesse and the Rippers has a gig and finds out that they're double booked with the Beach Boys. Like, probably not going to happen, but whatevs. So then they have like a joint jam session. I don't like stunt casting. I don't want it on my TV. It doesn't make any sense to me. It'd be better if like the Beach Boys showed up and they were playing characters. Like maybe Mike Love is Jesse Katsopoulos' dad. But no, he has to be Mike Love of the Beach Boys. Kind of went off on a rant there. But once again, stunt casting gets a big from me. Don't like it. A big Chris Jericho raspberry. Stunt casting. And the last six episodes of American Horror Story, Coven, same thing. First six episodes, yay! Awesome show, amazing, loved it. And Big Raspberry, get it off my TV screen. I will check out season two, though, which I haven't seen, called Asylum, for more amazing, hopefully amazing, American Horror Story. It was pretty sick and pretty gross in some of the shows and some of the episodes, like some really just squeamish type stuff. So I did. It's worth a watch, despite the fact I just gave it a patented Jericho. But just beware of the Stevie Nicks useless cameo. Hi, I'm Stevie Nicks. And then she plays a song. Ugh. Who greenlights this stuff? Hi, I'm American Olympic gold medalist Carl Lewis. Yay! Maybe they needed some Lover Boy too. All right, Chavo Guerrero, in studio for a second week. But before we get to Chavo, I got to tell you again about Squarespace and how cool it is. Squarespace is the easiest way to create your own killer website. Squarespace gives you everything you need to create an awesome-looking site for you or your business. You know, I'm not the most technically savvy guy. And that's why Squarespace is so great. Even I can use it, and I have. They have ready-made designs for you to start with, or you can use any of their style options to create a unique website yourself. And if you get stuck along the way, just take advantage of Squarespace's 24/7 support team. You can contact them any time of the day or night and get help immediately. Having problems at 3 a.m.? Ask Squarespace and they will get back to you ASAP. So add your own content, customize your style, and you'll have a website that looks amazing on every device. BlackBerry, Android, iPhone, UPhone, we all scream for phones. It's really that easy. And I'm going to do you one better. Try Squarespace today for free. For free. And when you're ready to go live, enter Chris. That's my first name. C-H-R-I-S. At checkout and save 10%. Plus, you get free hosting. What a deal. So use the promo code Chris at squarespace.com/Chris Jericho. That's squarespace.com/Chris Jericho. All right. My brother, my former traveling partner, Chavo Guerrero, is here. We were talking about your uncle, Eddie Guerrero, and his passing. And I remember at Eddie's funeral, I saw Chris Benoit and wasn't with the WWE at that point. I was taking some time off or whatever I was doing. And Chris gave me a hug with that same wail.
Right. And this is somebody that didn't show emotion.
Ever.
If you know Chris, he was like stone face. He never showed emotion. He, you know, if we would get him to laugh and laugh's crazy, it was such like a feat because he wouldn't do that. And you felt good about yourself.
You'd make a comment like Benoit's laughing.
Yeah. When he would laugh, man, you were like, oh, this is great. Because he was the no seller. You know, he wouldn't sell if he was mad. You never saw the guy get angry, right?
No.
You never saw him get angry. You never saw him sad, nothing. I mean, that same day at this funeral, he grabbed my wife and her shoulder was wet because he was crying
right,
so much.
Sad. Yeah. I remember I played him this tape one time, this tape from Canada. It was like an Indian radio station, like a Canadian Indian, like, you know, and it was a tape that was going around. It was really funny. And I played it for Chris and he didn't crack a smile once.
Right.
And I started second guessing my own sense of humor. Like, am I just not funny? Like, how could you not laugh at this?
That's the crippler.
And that was the crippler. Yeah. And remember the time we were in a hotel room somewhere and there was people making noise next door. Do you remember this?
I don't know. Maybe.
And Chris calls him
I don't remember much back then.
Chris calls him on the phone and he's like, you guys don't know how to party.
Oh, that's right.
And then hangs up
right.
And he's laughing. We're like, and
that's
then he goes
right.
Like, you guys don't know how to party.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're like,
yeah.
What are you doing? So then he takes a garbage can and fills it full of beer and water, and he might have
that's right,
trash.
That's right.
And he put it up against the guy's door,
yep.
Knocked on the door, and then ran away and closed it. And these guys opened the door, and then the big garbage can
right.
full of liquid fell on them. And he thought that was the funniest thing,
bro,
you could ever see. And it was like not even funny, he was. I remember him just howling like. He used to chew on these straws. He would have a coffee straw in his mouth.
With his missing tooth.
Missing tooth, belly laughing. And not really making a sound. Just like.
So funny. I remember this is a story. He and I, Chris, we're rooming together. And we're in some town. I don't even know where we're at. And we go down to the bar and go eat at the bar. That was after our, the show. I think the show was connected to the arena.
Right.
So, or the hotel was connected to the arena. So, a bunch of fans were in the bar and stuff. So we went down just to go get something to eat. So he ran up to make a phone call or something like that. He comes back down and goes, Chavo, very, very quiet, and goes, come check this out. So I'm like, what? Okay, I think he's just going to, I don't know what he's going to show me. So we go back to the room. He won't like give me a hint or anything. We go back to the room, take the elevator up, and we walk in, and he holds up this shoe. And he goes, look. I'm like, yeah, it's a shoe. And he goes, okay, this is what happened. I was walking back to the room, and there's a bunch of fans that are staying in that room, and he hears them horsing around. Hey, I'm Andre the Giant. Hey, I'm those, and they're obviously wrestling in the room.
Right.
So one of the guy's fans, opens the door, and chucks the shoe out the window.
Out the door
into the hallway. Chris sees it and picks it up and runs to his room and takes it up. And he's listening. He's like around the corner now, and he's listening. and he hears, "Hey, pal, where's my shoe?" And the guy's like, I threw it out in the hallway. And Chris is
right. That was his trophy,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah. And the guy's, it's not out here. He goes, sure, it's out there, bro. I just threw it out. And there's like, they're going, what? They're all looking for it. And he's listening and he's laughing.
Like a little kid,
he's laughing,
right?
Probably laughing so much. So he's laughing, laughing, laughing. And I hear, you sure you put it out there? And then the guy finally goes, it must have been one of those wrestlers. I bet you it was Disco Inferno. I bet you it was one of those guys. So I'm like, okay, that was funny. So we go back down and, we didn't do anything about it. We ate dinner and kind of forgot about it. So in the morning, we're getting ready to, fly out. It's probably, 8 in the morning, 9 in the morning. So I go, what do you do with that shoe? And he goes, watch. So he goes to the bathroom. Now, this is, again, this is Chris Benoit, the silent ribber. Doesn't show emotion. Yeah. Doesn't, you know, he loved a good rib, but he would never really pull them. He would just sit and watch from afar. So he sits and he takes the shoe and he goes to the bathroom, number two, in the shoe.
He poops in the shoe.
In the shoe. And I'm like, who are you?
Who does this?
Who has aliens just abducted my friend and gave you? Who's this guy? Where's my friend? So we're laughing. I'm laughing. Oh my God. What are you going to do with it? I'm like, first of all, get that out of my face. Second of all, what are you going to do with it? And he goes, watch. So he goes over and puts it in front of the person's door and knocks on the door and runs out. And now we're listening on the side. We're like, what? Now this guy's probably listening to this and going, that's who took my shoe. Feel honored that Chris Benoit took your shoe, because now we're sitting there listening and the guy opens up and goes, hey, and we laughed about this for weeks. We hear, hey, John, look, it's your shoe. Oh, what? The guy was like, what? Oh, my God. And they're selling it so loud. Pick it up. I'm not going to pick it up. You pick it up. No, my God. You did it. I didn't do it. You know who did it. It was so, we were laughing. We were trying, because we were only a few doors down from
right.
him. We're trying so hard not to, you know, for not
belly
to,
laugh,
here, from
yeah.
them, not to
blow
hear us
your
and
cover.
Know where we're at. And oh my gosh, that was one of the funniest things. And we laughed because we recreated that. Hey, look, Bill, here's your. We said that over and over again for months, and we would laugh. We laughed for.
Did you see a decline in Chris personality wise after Eddie's death?
No, you know what? People say that, you know, and
I'm just wondering, because at this time, you were riding with Chris pretty much exclusively at this point in time.
Yes, me and Chris, we had a big program together, you know, a feud, if you want to call it, and we ended up sticking together, and really because, you know, you were gone, Dean was an agent now.
Yeah.
Really, it was just he and I. Mm-hmm. We stuck up for each other, and I remember Chris saying, hey, man, I don't know what to do now that Eddie's gone. He was like my go-to guy, and I'm like, well, bro, I'm your go-to guy. Mm-hmm. You know, and it took a little time to build up that trust, but we did. And we were like brothers, bro. We would, you know, you worked him several times, so you know, but we would, before we'd go wrestle, we'd give each other a kiss on the cheek and say, okay, you know, bring it. Okay, bring it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we'd go out there completely blank. You know, we'd just say, okay, you blank, I'm blank. Okay, let's go out there. And we'd go 25 minutes.
Just call it in the
just
ring.
Just call the whole thing in the ring. And the referee's like, what's the finish? I don't know. It's either a frog splash or I'm tapping to something.
It's a crossface, yeah.
Yeah, or the
clover leaf or whatever.
Yeah, the what is it?
Sharpshooter.
Sharpshooter.
Yeah. whatever it's called.
Yeah. So we had no idea, you know. So we knew each other that well, and we stuck each other by the only time we for 4 days a week that we wouldn't be together was when he'd go to his room and I'd go to my room, which were next to each other. Mm-hmm. Give each other a kiss on the cheek. Say, okay, I'll see you in the morning. We'd get up, eat breakfast together. We'd train together. We would we do everything together. We, mm-hmm. You know, we were married. We were
wives. That's right. You know, it's interesting because, I mean, around that time, Black Cat, good friend of Chris, passed away. Right. Johnny Grunge, who was another very close confidant of Chris's, passed away. Ray Traylor passed away, Big Boss Man. Yeah, I remember when Ray died, he said, I can't take this anymore.
Yep.
I can't handle all my friends dying.
That's right.
And then just a few months after that, Eddie passed away.
Right.
And I always wondered if that was kind of like started sending him into this, you know,
I never saw a change in him, and I was with him all the time. And, you know, people, you know, always say, well, it's concussions and this, and he had so much, you know, we did scans on his brain, and he had the brain of an 80-year-old man from all the, you know, the hits and stuff. I totally understand people looking, trying to find out why.
Mm-hmm.
I was with him for, you know, the 8 months before.
More than anybody.
And
I couldn't even get him on the phone in that time. He would disappear.
Yeah,
but you were with him.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't see it, man. I didn't see it. I would have seen something different because we were with each other so much. And he was great at hiding things. He was like Houdini. We'd call him Houdini.
Yeah. He would just disappear.
Yeah. But you'd be at a bar and you want a beer? Yeah. I'd order him another beer. And then all of a sudden turn around. He's gone.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be in his room.
Yeah,
he'd just take off.
Call me in 5 minutes, and you know, you'd call him in 5 minutes.
Yeah, he's gone.
He's gone. Yeah, he'd answer the phone. Call me right back.
Yeah. Houdini, gone. Literally.
Yeah, I call him the Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah,
he would surface just briefly and then disappear into the depths, and you wouldn't find him.
Yeah. So I never saw it, man. I never saw a change in him. I never saw the, you know, people saying, "Oh, when Eddie died, he got so religious and this and that." Dude, I didn't see it. I mean, we were religious in our way, you know, and pray together before the matches and stuff like that. But you know, unless he just really, really, really was really good at hiding it from me. You know, obviously there's something else going on.
Mm-hmm. What do you think it might have been?
You got me, man.
So many factors.
So many factors. And, you know, people seeing this that, you know, listen to this if you don't know what happened.
Chris went on and over the course of a weekend, basically, I don't even know a better word to use it, murdered his wife and his young son.
Exactly.
And this was a guy.
And then hung himself.
And this was a guy that if you stood him in a line with 100 other guys and said, which guy do you like the most or respect the most? Chris would probably be, and Chris and Eddie would probably be the two.
Yep.
And if I had to ever, you know, leave the country and had to leave my kids with somebody,
it'd be Chris.
I would have left him with Chris or with you. Yeah. And you would never have guessed this. It came out of nowhere.
Absolutely. I mean, you knew him so well, and I never saw him get mad. Never seen him get mad.
See him get pissed off,
there'd be times we'd be on a bus and, you know, somebody would kind of treat him wrong, and I'd get hot. I'd be like ready to pounce on this dude, and he'd be like, "Chavo, it's not worth it. Don't worry, it's not worth it." I never saw him get mad.
Mm-hmm. Like, so what happened that last weekend? And you guys were traveling together, and it was just you two at this point in time, right?
Just us three, you know. Scott Armstrong would jump in every once in a while with us, you know,
right?
Kind of the three of us, you know, and
so you'd meet at the airport for the beginning of a loop.
Yeah, see, I'd fly in from California, he'd fly in from Georgia, and we'd fly into wherever, let's say we flew into, you know, Louisiana, we'd meet, and then so one of us would get the car, and then we'd travel 4 days together, and then we'd drop the car off the airport, and we'd fly our separate ways home for 2 days and right back. And that was for, you know, 8 straight months. So this one was a little different because we were close to Georgia.
Right.
So I ended up staying, we went home, and anytime, you know, a wrestler can spend the night in his own bed, he does.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's 300-mile drive or 500-mile drive, mm-hmm. because we're never home in our beds. So we were able to go to his house, and I'd never even seen his house. He moved away from everybody. He moved to the rural part of Atlanta, just so, because, you know, he was such a loner. He's a lone wolf,
mm-hmm.
and that he didn't want you know, people to know kind of where he lived and stuff. He had a P.O. box.
Really?
Yeah, the whole deal.
Did you ever go to his house?
Yeah, so we went to his house and stayed at his house. And I remember he said, "Hey, guys, hey, I'm really private. Please don't tell anybody about my house, you know, how it is."
Wow.
I was like, "All right, cool, no problem, Chris." So we stayed there. And we
You and Scott?
No, me. Me
oh, you
by
said
myself.
We. Okay, you and Chris, gotcha.
He and I. So we stayed there that night and got up in the morning, and he, you know, by the time I woke up, he already had steaks and eggs ready to go for us. You know, the protein diet, you know, ready to go. We were going to work out, you know, and I saw his son, Daniel there. And, you know, I was the cruiserweight champ at the time. So I had, I gave Daniel the belt. He, you know, he really wanted to see the belt. So I know that he went to Chris and he said, "Dad, can I? And so Chris was like, ask him. Can I see your belt? And I was like, yeah, of course. So he held the belt. Okay, you're the champ. We put him on him, took pictures with him, the whole deal, you know, and all that. So we went from there and did our loop, four days together. And then we ended up in North Carolina, Charlotte, I believe, because we ended up seeing an old friend from WCW. Remember Donna Seaman?
Donna
and her sister, Deb. We ended up, the last night of the loop, before we're all getting ready to fly home, we went to go eat with them at night after the show. So we went and just ate and stuff. And I just remember Chris ordering shots, like a tequila. Like, hey, we're doing a tequila shot. Every once in a while, he'd be like, he'd have a couple beers and that was it. But every once in a while, he'd like, okay, let's do this. And just start drinking. All right.
Or eat a whole cheesecake. Like, he never ate a sweet. And then one day he just like eat a whole one.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Yeah. One cheesecake.
Yeah, yeah. Put the whole thing in his mouth.
Yeah.
Right? The whole
yeah,
piece.
And then laugh. Yeah.
So, you know, we're in shots. We're doing shots of tequila and stuff and having a good time. And I was pretty jacked up, you know. So we go to our own room. I go to sleep. And we got to get up in 2 hours to catch his flight. So I'm sleeping, set my alarm and everything. Well, we probably had 8 shots of tequila, you know, a few beers. So next thing you know, I hear the door banging. Bam, 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 bam. What the heck is that? Bam, 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 bam. I'm like in a dream. Well, I go to it. He's like, "Chavo, we got to go." I'm like, "What time is it?" Oh, man, I slept through my alarm. I never sleep through my alarm. Ever. I slept through my alarm. I was like, "Oh my, we got to catch this flight." So we jumped we didn't no shower. I just threw all the stuff in my bag and we jumped in the car and we raced to the airport. And I ended up, getting to the plane and he made his flight. I missed my flight.
Gotcha.
I missed my flight. So he made it just barely, you know, I ended up missing my flight. So I caught, you know, the next flight out an hour later. When I landed in my connection, I landed in, we were in North Carolina. So he went to Atlanta, a 1 hour flight. I had to go to Texas. I think I landed in Dallas. So I get a call from him. "Hey man, just checking up on you. Did you make it okay?" I said, "Yeah man, I'm okay. Thanks. You know, thanks for getting me up, man. I never sleep through my alarm." "Ah, no problem, man. No problem. No problem." So I went my way. He went his way. And in 2.5 days, we were going to hook up again. You know, we were on the road again. So now it's Belmont, Texas, I believe. And I...
this is on like a Saturday or a Friday?
This is now Saturday morning.
Okay.
So the first one we left, might have been probably Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
So now it's Saturday morning, early. I land in Dallas, my connection, and we always get on the phone and, you know, and coordinate. What time you get in,
yeah,
the whole deal, I'll pick you up or he'll pick me up, whatever. So I call him, no answer. Then all of a sudden I get a call from him. And he's like, oh, call right back. Hey, Chavo, hey, what's up, man? He sounds just off. I'm like, man, you okay? He's like, yeah, I'm cool, man. Just really bad, a really, really just bad weekend. I just, you know, Daniel and Nancy are sick, his wife, you know, and, you know.
So you're actually talking to him at this point.
Talking to him, yeah. And he's,
and this is basically after he's probably killed his wife.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. They're sick, you know, they're not feeling good. And I'm like, all right, cool. And, well, you coming in? Yeah, I missed my flight, but don't worry. I'm going to catch another flight and I'll be there. Okay, I go, just call me when you get in and I'll pick you up, you know, no matter what time it is. You know, we were landing in Houston. I had to drive to Belmont. And I was like, you know, don't worry about it. We're late. I'll wait for you. Okay. So he gets off getting ready to get off the phone. And he goes, he makes a point of it. It stops. He goes, Chavo. I go, yeah. And he goes, I love you. I said, I love you too, man. Wasn't too out, you know, off kilter, because mm-hmm. we always tell each other we love each other.
Yeah.
But this one was really forced. It was not forced. It was really like made a point of it. It was like, hey, man, okay, I love you, brother. Okay. No, it was like, Chavo, I love you.
I want you to understand this.
Basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you
don't forget this.
Coming from a man with very few words.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, all right, I love you too, bro. So I hung up and I thought, that was strange. So I called him right back and I go, hey, man, are you all right? I'm fine, man. Like I said, I just had a real hard weekend, you know, and just, you know, real hard weekend. And I had to go to take him, you know, Daniel and Nancy to the hospital. And I'm like, oh, okay, man. Well, I'm here. Okay, man. Okay, cool. So then hung up. And that was the last I actually talked to him. I guess he'd called Scott Armstrong, too. And he and I hooked up. Scotty, we hooked up and we ended up driving, waiting for Chris. No call. I'm calling, hey, dude, did you miss your flight? Did you make your new flight? No call, no answer. Okay, well, I guess we got to drive. Well, if we got to come back, you know, we said if we got to come back from and go pick him up, we will. So we went to the show, and, you know, the agents were asking, where's Chris?
This is a house show.
House show. Where's Chris? Chris. Next day was a pay-per-view,
yeah.
In Houston. Well, I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know. He missed his flight. You know, he's going to, okay. So we drive to Houston the next day, me and Scotty. And
still no word.
Still no from Chris. We're calling him. Okay, nothing. I get some texts on my phone at probably 5 a.m. And I get texts from Chris.
So you wake up in the morning, you've got these
not
texts.
Even before. It woke me up before, oh, okay, 5 in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I look at the my text and I'm like, that's weird. It says the dogs are in the enclosed pool area. The garage door is open. I looked at it. I was like, well, that's weird. Is this one of those texts you get? You know, sometimes you get texts, you know, from 3 days ago, you never delivered, yeah, and then all of a sudden you got a text. And this is kind of the start of texting, you know. Now it's a little different, but
yeah,
back
it was
then,
2007.
A lot of times, you know, texts didn't come through and they got lost, and all of a sudden you got them. And I was like, well, that's
you get weird. Half a text.
Half a text, yeah, that was weird. So okay, I wrote it off. Then I get another text from Nancy's phone, from his wife's phone, and it said the same thing, you know, the same text. That's really weird. Okay, whatever. I kind of wrote it off. So then I had to get up in 2 hours, so I got up. I look at, I go downstairs to meet Scotty Armstrong, and I look at him, I go, did you get anything weird last night happen? And he goes, yeah, I got some weird texts from Chris. I said, me too. Did it say this? He goes, yeah. So we call Chris. No answer. God, that's weird. So we go to the pay-per-view. Chris isn't showing up. And they're asking us, where's he at? I'm not sure. We're not sure where he's at. Now we're covering for him. We think maybe, you know.
Blatantly lying for him now.
Well, you know, we're blatantly, you know, whatever. We're just covering for him. No, I haven't heard from him. I don't know what's going on. Okay, great. Didn't tell us anything about the text, nothing.
Did you feel something was going on weird
something,
at this
point? Something was going on. And I remember Arn Anderson saying, this is later on in the day, because he was supposed to wrestle the pay-per-view.
He was supposed to wrestle for the title.
Yeah, the ECW championship against CM Punk. He was supposed to wrestle him. And this is a big match.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Arn Anderson saying, you know what, if Benoit didn't show up with no word, he's either has just taken off to like Alaska and mm-hmm. is going to be like a, you know, a merchant marine or something, or he's dead, basically. That's and I remember him saying that, not meaning it is he's right. dead, but there's something going on for him not to show up.
And either option being just as viable, because I could see him just going off to become a merchant marine and saying,
and
screw this.
Yeah, and being gone, you know, basically right. the ending of Dexter.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then, so I didn't say anything. We didn't say anything. The next day, we're in Corpus Christi for a super show, another super show. And those damn super shows, man. I don't know what's got
me. Yeah. But and you still didn't know anything.
We still didn't know. We've been calling. So finally, I go to Johnny Ace. I go, Johnny. Johnny was the head of talent relations.
Mm-hmm.
I go, Johnny, this is my phone. This is what I got yesterday. And he's like, you know, with his Johnny voice, Jabo, hey, what are you talking about? Why didn't you show me this yesterday? I said, Johnny, we're trying to cover for him.
Mm-hmm.
Be honest with you, I didn't know what was going on. We're covering for him. He's like, all right, let me get on the phone. So I guess they called the Atlanta police or whatever, and I don't know anything about it. You know, that's the last thing I heard. And then all of a sudden, about an hour later, they do a big old meeting at the ring with all the wrestlers. And then they did this periodically, you know, to talk about, you know.
Yeah, they would have like a team meeting.
Yeah,
or
where the company's going, or, you know, Vince had to say something big, you know. So
yeah.
We go to the meeting. We're sitting there, and I look at Ric Flair, and Ric Flair's crying. And I go, Ric, what's going on? And he goes, they're gone. I said, what do you mean they're gone? And this is before anybody knew anything. And he goes, Daniel, Nancy, and Chris. And I said, what do you mean they're gone? And I had to hear it from his mouth. I couldn't hear that. He said, they're gone. What do you mean they're gone? He goes, they're dead. Just now, right now, my heart just dropped again. Mm-hmm. That's what I felt. I was like, and Vince hadn't announced it to everybody yet. And I'm sitting there next to everybody, and I just put my head down and was like, oh, what? Well, are you kidding me? This is a year and a half after Eddie died.
Yeah.
You know, I had another friend. This happened to another friend of mine. I was like, what are you talking about? And sure enough, man, then all of a sudden Vince announces it to people and saying, we don't know the circumstances at this time. All we know is that there's been a death, and Chris Benoit is no longer with us, and his son and his wife are no longer with us either. We don't know the circumstances. We don't know what's going on. So we're taking tonight, making a tribute show to Chris. I pulled Vince. I freaking grabbed him in the back and was like, what happened? What happened? And he just hugged me, and I'm crying on Vince McMahon's shoulder, and I'm like, no, not again, not again, yeah, not again. Yeah, not I'm again. Crying on yeah. it. He's hugging me like a child. I mean, he's hugging me like really tight, you know. And I was like, what the heck? You serious?
You know, it was interesting because I had been talking to Brian Gewirtz, right. And he called me earlier in the day and said, I got to tell you something you're going to love. Because what I found out afterwards that Bruce Campbell was originally going to be on the show, because that show was a funeral for Vince, who had just been blown up.
That's right. That's right.
And they had Bruce Campbell, who's, you know, from Evil Dead and, you know, the actor, and I'm a big fan of his. He's got something I got to tell you. He left a message.
Yeah.
So I went to the gym. I worked out with my son, Ash.
Yeah.
Got back in the car, called him back, and he's like, total change. I'm like, hey, what's going on, man? What do you got to tell me? And he's like, you're not going to want to hear this. And I was thinking, like,
you just told me to call you back, right?
Yeah. He goes, this is horrible. And right. I was thinking, because he said earlier, I got to tell you something about Vince.
Right.
And when I talked to him, I thought he was going to say that Vince is going to go on the air and like bury me or something. Like, this is horrible. Like, I didn't know what he was talking about. And then he said the same thing. He's gone. Who's gone? Chris. And I'm like,
where'd he go?
Chris who? Like, which Chris are you talking about?
Right.
Benoit and then Nancy and Daniel. Same thing with me, huge whale. I remember my son, I'll never forget it. He goes, Daddy, you cry funny, because I had to pull over on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And I was just, it was like you said, you just like, all three of them?
Right.
And then, like, what, did they have carbon monoxide poisoning? Did they have food poisoning?
At the point in time, nobody knew anything.
What were the boys saying? Were the speculation? What was it?
There was nothing. We didn't know. We were like, what do you mean he's gone? Like, what happened? We don't know. He's gone. We didn't know.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And then when you actually did find out what had happened, it was still to this day, we still don't know what happened.
Still don't know what happened. And then once you actually found out what really happened, that, you know, the details behind it with, you know, Nancy being, you know, killed, him killing her, then killing his son and then hanging himself, we're like, that's not the guy we knew. That's just not the guy we knew.
Yeah. And then there's so many, you know, like we said, we never know for sure. I still think that it's the concussion thing.
Sure.
The hardening of the brain.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm actually going to have Chris Nowinski on to talk to him about it.
He's great.
He actually studied Benoit's brain.
He helped me when I had my big concussion, because the doctors didn't know anything.
Yeah.
They're just like, there was no protocol. It was not like when I tore my bicep, they were like, hey, you get in a sling for 4 months. And this.
Right.
No, it was like, I go, when can I go back to work? Well, when you feel better. Well, Chris calls me and Nowinski calls me and really, really, you know.
I think, like you said, I think it was maybe one of the first times this had ever happened. And now, with all the research that's been done, if there was symptoms or signs, you would know about it. But back in 2007, I think Chris's case might have been the very first. Hey, we'll never know for sure, but it gives me some kind of closure that I can at least believe that my friend just didn't go completely insane for no reason.
Sure.
At least that gives me a reason.
I know. And I feel your pain.
And it could have just been easily one of us with all the amount of pain we've done and all the damage we've had, et cetera. But, you know, it's cool to be able to reconnect, but this years going by without talking and stuff has got to stop.
I agree.
Charles, I love you, man.
I love you too, man. Thank you for having on me.
Hey, so you're going to notice a little bit of a change in sound quality. What happened was we were right in the middle of this amazing story that Chavo was telling about basically the day that Chris Benoit passed away. And there was a bunch of people in the Podcast One studios, and our conversation was going so good that basically we had gone overtime and we were getting kicked out of the studio. So all day long it's been bothering me that we didn't get a chance to really finish off the interview properly. So I thought it'd be cool for Chavo to call back and just continue on with what we were talking about. So there is a difference in sound quality, and now you know the reason why. Chavs, thanks for calling back, man.
Yeah, no, heck yeah, anytime, brother, for sure.
So, and
my sound quality still sounds just as amazing.
So basically what we're talking about is, you know, you had this you know, finally the mystery of what had happened to Benoit had revealed. You're telling Vince McMahon, what are we doing? And, of course, now no one really knows what has happened. What was it like for you in the aftermath of you know, finding out the horrible tragedy and finding out the reasons on why, you know, why the family was basically dead? How was it for you, you know, knowing Chris as good as you did?
Well, we went from, you know, being at a super show and, of course, having to rewrite the whole show and dedicating it to Chris Benoit, not knowing what happened yet. There were no details out yet.
Right.
So as we knew it, we just bailed. We were gone, and we don't know why. We don't know what happened. Was it foul play? What happened? So they dedicated the show to Chris, and they asked, of course, if I wanted to, if I just wanted to go home. I said, no, I want to wrestle. I want to wrestle. To me, that's like my release. You know? So I got in and wrestled, and then on the way back, my dad was on the show. We drove, ended up driving to Houston, San Antonio for the next show for SmackDown or whatever it was, and we were driving, and you know, the way they ended the show, if you remember, they ended the show, which is an incredible moment, was they ended the show with Eddie and Chris and the WrestleMania moment.
Right.
Where they both, you know, won the heavyweight championship at WrestleMania, and they ended WrestleMania with those two in the ring with all the confetti coming down and everything. That's how they ended that tribute show. So, I mean, what an incredible moment, man. We were just like, wow, jeez, you know, talking about tears flowing, man.
Yeah.
It was crazy. So then the next day, we get to, I believe it was San Antonio, and then all of a sudden, we start hearing details of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're like, what? Whoa, what's going on? This is wrong. This is not right. He did not murder his wife and his son and kill himself. Something is not adding up. You know, now things start coming out. So now all of a sudden, you know, WWE starts, you know, backpedaling a little bit and going, okay, you know, well, we weren't aware of the circumstances and this kind of stuff. And right then, that's when they start distancing themselves from, you know, from the legacy of Chris Benoit, which you don't blame them. You really can't be associated with that. But it's just it's sad and, you know, so hurtful for me and to the fans to see that he's not even recognized for so many of his incredible accomplishments, but only understanding the way, you know, you can't associate yourself with that.
He almost brought the whole business down. If you remember, there was a huge backlash. Once again, it was interesting for me, just as weird timing. I wasn't working for the company when Eddie passed away, nor when Chris passed away. But I remember, much like you did, I called Vince and was like, what happened? And he's like, I don't know. And I was like, was everything that Chris stood for a lie? Like, I couldn't fathom it. And that's why I said, listen, I want to come and go on some of these shows because we're hearing a lot of BS about Chris and about the business. And I kind of went on Larry King and you know,
I remember that.
Greta and Nancy Grace and on behalf of the company, on behalf of Chris. But it was you know, to try and grasp that and what he had done, knowing him, it took me a long time. I remember I called you on the phone. I called Dean. I called Regal. Penzer.
We were all trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Trying to put it together. But this is not the guy we know.
Right. You know, it was interesting because I remember Regal on that tribute. He was the one guy that kind of – he wasn't gushing. Like, remember, everyone else was like, Chris is the best and yeah. so much respect. And Regal was like, well, you know, he was a great performer in the ring, and whatever happened, happened. There was some kind of weird thing there. He knew something had gone wrong that yeah. night, and maybe because he lived in Peachtree City in Atlanta with Chris. But, you know, how was it for you, though? I mean, going on forward, you know, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, within the course of, like, I don't know, 18 months, you had lost your two riding partners, your best friends in Eddie and Chris. Was it hard for you to stay on the road at that point in time? How did you get over that, man?
You know what? I remember being on the phone, being at home, and all of a sudden, I had confided in Undertaker once before, in Mark and Taker.
Yeah.
He's a very, very good personal friend, you know, and I feel bad because I've cried on the guy's shoulder probably 3 or 4 different times.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Eddie died, of course. But then when Chris died, man, when Eddie died, I felt like, you know, he was out of pain now and, you know, he's in a better place. And I just felt that, okay, it's okay. Well, Chris, I didn't, just because of the circumstances. I was, like, questioning myself and questioning life in general. I was really questioning, what does this all matter? What does it matter?
Right.
I worked butt off to be one of the best wrestlers in the world, if not the best wrestler in the world, you know, to be a good father and a good husband and a good friend and a good person. And then all of a sudden, it was gone in an instant. And everything that he worked for, everything that we all worked for, what does it mean? I was searching, and no joke, bro, I get choked up about it right now, and I seriously do. But I was searching for the meaning of life. I really, really was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, I didn't know where to turn, bro. But I was, you know, besides getting on my knees and praying, you know, I called Taker, man, and he really helped me through it a lot. Bro, it was a dark, a very, very dark time in my life, man, because there was so much there was no answers. There was no answers to my questions. And
mm-hmm.
Why are we here? What does this all mean? What does it all matter? What
right.
does it matter if I'm, you know, producing for my family and trying to be the best person I can be? What did it all matter?
Yeah.
Did it even matter? It took me a while to come to realization and come back to earth and start seeing, okay, yes, it does matter. There's a reason why I'm doing what I'm doing and all this stuff. And sometimes you may not know it, but, you know, God has a plan for us all. You know, that it was tough, bro. I'm sure you went through the same thing. Just because I was there on the road in WWE still wrestling, you were at home going through the same thing without that support system, bro. So I feel for you.
It was tough because, like you said, I didn't have the support system, and like we discussed earlier, I hadn't been able to get a hold of Chris for a while, and he had pulled those classic Houdini moments where he had called me and said, he called me and went, listen, I'm up for the rest of the night. Give me a call when you can. And I had been doing, you know, whatever, putting gas in the tank and call him back 2 minutes later, and there's nothing. And I call him again, and there's nothing. And I hadn't talked to him in about 6 months. And the morning that all the stuff went down, he had called me on Saturday morning, and I was playing with my son, so I didn't pick up the phone. I called him back a couple hours later, and of course, then it was all radio silence. But, you know, I always had that feeling in the back of my head, like, you know, like you said with Eddie, like, what if I would have got there earlier? Like, what if I would have picked up the phone on that day?
What if I would have gone to his room, to Eddie's room that night when he really needed to talk to me?
Yeah.
And you know, what was he going to tell me?
You know, right. Like, and for me, like, what if I would have picked up the phone on that Saturday morning when, and who knows, he might have already, you know, killed Nancy at that point. I don't know the timeline. None of us do. But what if that was his last ditch effort? Like, I don't know. I'm going to call Jericho. Maybe, and I wasn't there. And it took me a long time to get over that because, like you said, I wasn't with you. I wasn't with Dean. You know, I remember Johnny Ace calling my house that night and, you know, do you want to say any words? And I was like, I told my wife, don't even tell him to F off. You know, I don't want to talk to anybody. The only one I wanted to talk to was you or Dean because we were the gang. And I didn't want to talk to, you know, anybody.
Right.
Like you said, I didn't, like, what do you do? Because everything we believed in, like I said, here's a guy who you could put up with 100 other guys and you say, I trust him the most. If I was in a foxhole, I want him on my side. And suddenly this whole thing happens.
He was a guy that didn't let anybody in, but let us in.
Right.
We were the privileged ones that he let in, us and a few other people. That's really the truth. Who else was going to talk to about him at WWE? Who? Nobody else. Nobody really knew him like we knew him.
There's a lot more with Chavo Guerrero, my brother. Right after I tell you how you can win some delicious, mouth-watering Sherry's Berries, you can score some of these giant chocolate-dipped strawberries for free. Yeah, free. And it's this easy. Be one of the first 5 people to tweet hashtag Sherry's Berries, that's Sharis Berries, to @TalkIsJericho, and I will hook you up with a promo code to get yourself some free, amazing Sherry's Berries. So do it now. Hashtag Sherry's Berries to TalkIsJericho, but you got to spell it right. Hashtag Sharis Berries. And if you're among the first 5, and if you live in the good old United States of America, you will win free berries.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Talk is Jericho.
Back with Talk is Jericho. We're just talking about the last few days of Chris Benoit's life and the aftermath, and finally we get over it. How long did you stay in the WWE after Chris passed away? Were you there for a long time after?
Yeah, well, what year did he pass away? I almost block it out of my mind. I know the date exactly when Eddie passed away. You know, November 13, 2005.
Chris was June or so of 2007.
I don't even know that date because I don't want to know that date. That's a black
day for us, man.
Of my life. I don't even want to know that date or the year. I just want to black it out. I guess I left in 2012, I believe. I was there.
Oh, wow. So you were there for a long time after then.
Yeah. I was there another 4 years, probably.
I wasn't aware it was that long. Was it ever hard for you to show up at a – I remember after Eddie died, Chris would tell me, like, it was hard for me to go to an arena because I'd think, oh, here we are in St. Louis, and this is where Eddie and I did this. Or was it hard for you to come to some of those places afterwards, or were you pretty much able to get on once you got closure, once you got over it?
When Eddie died, it was hard to go to a hotel room, man. It was really hard.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was really hard. It was – you know, with Chris too, it was hard because my friend wasn't there, my riding partner wasn't there, my brother wasn't there, another one.
Right.
You know, they weren't there, so it was like, all right, you know, you go there kind of like a lost puppy a little bit, and kind of, you know, you pretend everything's okay, and you know, people look at you with them sad eyes, and you know, and you just pretend that everything's okay, and you do, you do show up, and you still go because, you know, you do have mouths to feed and kids to put through college and that kind of stuff. But, you know, there was a while for me to find myself again. It really was. You know, and then, you know, you go to WWE, or any wrestling organization, when you're on the road that long, you just start losing track of time. Before you know it, you're 50 and you can't wrestle anymore.
And you got nothing else going on, you know. And speaking of which, I mean, I know you spent some time in TNA. You just recently ended your time there. Just quickly, what was the big difference between working with TNA and WWE?
Very, very, very big difference, bro. Locker room, especially when I first got to TNA, locker room was great. There's not wasn't a lot of stress. There was really it was kind of like the old WCW mentality or in the locker room that locker room feel to where there wasn't that pressure on you. You know, we just go out and do what we wanted to do anyways. And I was at the point in my career that I was confident in myself and I could hang with anybody I felt and there's no problem. But then at the same time, there wasn't that pressure. There wasn't that pressure to go perform and to steal the show and all that kind of stuff. And even though I felt that, there's a lot of people just you just go through the motions because you feel like sometimes they didn't care. So sometimes you're just like, all right, I'll go through the motion there too. Well, I can't do that, but you know you see that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that was the difference. Nothing negativity about any of them because for me, man, I hope the best for all organizations. I want these guys to succeed because it's better for the fans It's better for the wrestlers. It's better for competition for the organizations. It's better for everybody.
Really. Absolutely. The more places there are for the boys to work, the better it is for the boys.
Yeah, you're pulling for all these people, you know. You really are. So, you know, I had a short tenure there, you know, about just over a year, you know, and it got to the point where every time I was going to work with all the other things I had going on, I kind of was losing money and losing opportunities.
Right.
You know, I don't need to build my wrestling brand anymore. It's built. You know,
yes.
I got it. My family has been over 75 years in the wrestling business, building this brand. You know, so we're, you know, known throughout the world for wrestling. That I wasn't going to get any bigger. You know, I was done. The brand was built. People knew me. That was good. You know, I was done. So
right.
That's why I've kind of moved on. And you know, you're not like you're not saying that you're not going to wrestle, because wrestling's in our heart. Wrestling's
it's in our blood. That's right.
Yeah, we love it so much, and it can be such a great business. And it can be. There's no feeling like it in the world. There's no high in the world getting in front of a big crowd and really just, you know, giving that 5-star match and having
sure.
to put them on that roller coaster, you know. So it's always there. It just, you know, sometimes I would say this: you have to plan your exit strategy in wrestling, because someone's going to plan it for you. Either wrestling's going to plan it or you're going to plan it.
Yeah.
And if wrestling plans it, you're not going to like it.
That's a good point. It's going to happen either way.
Yeah. You can only borrow it. It's just like that ability. It's just a young man's business. And you can really only borrow it for a short time. And then you got to give it back, you know. And you can give it back on your terms or their terms, you know. And
that's
and
right.
That's I admire you a lot, because you've done it on your terms, you know. And that's something that, you know, a lot of the wrestlers, they don't do. They do it on wrestlers' terms.
You just had a great quote where you said, you know, basically the end is coming, and either you plan it yourself or wrestling plans it for you. And if wrestling plans it for you, you kind of get left, you know, outside holding the bag. Now, I mean, obviously, I know some of the stuff that you got going on. We're actually even doing some work together in some businesses.
That's right.
What else do you have going on? I know you're doing some acting. You're doing some movies that are coming?
Yeah. I just finished a movie right now called Fight to the Finish. And it's an MMA movie, and I play a crooked trainer, you know, for the MMA guys. Yeah, Guerrero, lie, cheat,
that's right. Right. So lie, cheat, and steal, right? Lie, cheat, and
right,
steal.
Right, right. Yeah, so that was, that's one. And you know, I've kind of created a partnership with my buddy, MMA fighter, Rampage Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Rampage Jackson.
Yeah.
We live really close to each other, and, you know, we've known each other for a little bit, and our kids have played in the same, you know, football team and stuff like that, but we kind of created this partnership to where we both realized that we like hanging out with each other, we like having fun, and we both hit a different demographic.
Yes.
So we're doing some projects together, which is some possible reality show stuff, some possible movies. You know, in Hollywood, there's a lot of possibilities. Possible this, possible that. Yeah, you know, everybody loves you. Yeah, you're the greatest. You know, right?
Yeah. Every meeting you ever have, you walk out, they love you. They love you.
I know. My wife's heard it so many different times, poor girl. She's like, I don't believe anything, especially because of wrestling and all the steam they blow up your butt. That she doesn't believe it until the check is in the bank and it's cash.
And it's cash. That's right.
And it's cash. Yeah, for real. Because we usually add checks in the mail or to the bank, and all of a sudden, what? There's no funds to cover that. What? But you know, that's you know what we're kind of going through right now. There's a possible fight league that we're actually doing together. Also, we have a lot of things going on.
There's so many possibilities when you walk away from kind of the confining world of wrestling, isn't there?
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, and that's one thing that wrestling wants you to believe is that you really need wrestling. There's no life outside of wrestling. They really want you to believe that. You know, and for some people, you know, there's life. It's just not in wrestling. It's not in the Hollywood life. You know,
right.
Okay, whatever. You have to be okay with that. And with us, you know, we've been so long that there is so many different possibilities out there. And you know, with me, I have a whole, you know, a whole Hispanic culture behind me.
Yeah.
You know? And there was a time when I kind of realized, and I didn't realize it at first because you know you're just you know working, living your dream, and you know feeding your family. Well, I had I don't know how many times people have come up to me and hugged me and say, hey, thank you for what you're doing for La Raza, you know, for the Hispanic culture, for the Latinos. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm just feeding my family. They said, no, you don't understand. We don't have anybody. We don't have people in Hollywood. We don't have people in sports. We don't have people in NFL. We have very, very few people. And for you representing, you know, we appreciate it. And we're behind you. And that really got me thinking, and that's really a big reason why I left WWE, and I was like, it's not just me anymore, you know, and whether I like it or not, it's kind of been, you know, put on upon me, but you have to accept it. It's, there's a whole, you know, culture kind of behind you.
Depending on you, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, that, you know, you're their hero.
You're representing. It's the same thing for me, even, you know, being Canadian. It's like, you go anywhere and it's like, ah, Jericho's Canadian, all right. And I'm from Winnipeg in the middle of the country, and, you know, Newfoundland is 5,000 miles away, but people still treat me as a hometown hero because you're a Canadian. We, you know, we're a minority, just like you, north and south of the border, man.
That's right. A and Way connection.
Let me ask you a question. Just something popped in my head, and I don't know if you've ever thought about this. I know you have two almost teenage sons. They're big boys. Have they ever expressed any interest into getting into wrestling? And if they haven't, does it ever cross your mind that this could be the end of the Guerrero family in wrestling?
Yeah, you know what? We've talked about that a lot. And although, you know, they love wrestling, going and watching me wrestle and all that kind of stuff, they're not – I made sure that I didn't live, breathe, and eat wrestling like it was when I grew up. And the only reason being that it's, you know, the reason my family did it was because they were involved in wrestling for everything. They, you know, took tickets, they've set up rings, they've sold popcorns, they've wrestled, they've promoted, they've done everything. That's just the way it was.
It was a family business.
Yes, yes. You know, even though they didn't expect me to go into it, you know, I knew I always was going to. My kids, I got home and I tried not to bring wrestling home with me, even though, you know, it's always on your mind.
Yes.
You know, I don't know how many wrestling moves I've thought about in my head, and then all of a sudden fly to my wife, hey, baby, come here. Let me try this on you, you know? And she's like, what are you doing? You know, and of course, I didn't do it hard on her, but I was like, I'll put a hold on her and say, okay, that's how you do it, you know? Okay,
yeah, just try it out, yeah.
Yeah, you know, because it's always on your mind. So I really tried hard to separate myself, and when I came home, I wasn't, you know, Chavo Guerrero, the wrestler. I was just...
You were Sal. You were Sal Guerrero.
Yeah, exactly. I was just that guy, you know, that came home and, you know, my job was on TV or whatever. You know, I don't believe the hype. I don't get into all that. And, you know, I don't want to lose my identity in wrestling or in Hollywood or whatever. And you know, if you're not careful, it will consume you.
It's easy.
Then without it, you're lost. You have no identity.
Right.
And I've seen it. I've seen it 100 times. And I didn't want to be that person, you know. So with my kids, man, I told them, if this is what you want, okay, fine. You bring me a degree, and then we'll talk.
I'll
train you guys if you want. But, you know, now you really do need to have a degree out there for anything.
Yeah.
You know, the times have changed. But, you know, like my oldest son wants to be a pro football player, and my youngest son wants to be a chef. So I'm like, all right, cool, whatever you guys want to do.
Hey, chefs got more TV time nowadays than wrestlers do.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, I'm friends with, you know, Robert Irvine and friends with Guy Fieri. From, you know, years back and stuff. Can't say we're super good friends, but, you know, we know each other.
Right.
His wife was a good friend of mine, and I used them as examples, and I said, look at these cool guys, man. This, you know, you don't have to just cook and be this.
He can be a character,
Yeah, look at these guys. They're cool, tough guys, and they're cooks.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, my youngest son's like, yeah, it's cool. You know, but whatever they want to do, you know, I always tell them, it doesn't really matter. You just got to give it your all.
You don't put pressure on them going, if you don't go into wrestling, the Guerrero dynasty is over.
No. You just can't. That's too much pressure.
There's
so many second and third generation wrestlers that are out of work.
Yeah.
That never made it. That could have been very good or were good and just never got that break. You've seen 100 of them.
Or just didn't have the affinity for it and were kind of forced into it. You look like a guy like David Flair or Chris Von Erich, like, you know, Dean Hart. Those guys just weren't good. They weren't ready for it.
Yeah. And it's a very, very hard business. You know, as you know, it's one of those, I always say this analogy, it's such a great business for young guys. Hey, go travel the world and make some money and stuff. But then all of a sudden, you know, you get married and you have kids. And now what do I do? I'm trapped. How do I get out?
Exactly.
And sometimes that's what wrestling wants. They want you to feel that way, that you're trapped, that you can't get out, that you owe, that they have, they hold all those cards.
You got nowhere to go. If you've got no leverage, you're in trouble.
That's right, dude. And you know what? I was in Spain one time, and I took my wife. It was probably one of my last WWE trips, overseas trips. It was my last one. I knew it was coming to an end. I knew it, that I was getting ready to leave. So I took her with me and went to Spain, went to France, and I ended up, I was at a restaurant in Spain and probably got recognized, and not because they didn't know Rusty was there. I probably got recognized 15 times. And I was like, okay, dude, my brand is built.
Yeah,
I don't need it. You know, thank God, Vince and the WWE has, thank you for investing all this money into me, and then you're not going to use me, so now I'm going to leave. <You know?
laughs> Well, let me ask you one more question. Yeah. Gun to head, favorite match of all time. Does one pop in your head?
Favorite match. You know how many times we've been asked this question, favorite match. You know what? Probably one of my favorite matches. You know, there's so many different people. You know, it'd be Benoit, it'd be Mysterio, it'd be Eddie.
SmackDown 6.
Yeah, SmackDown 6, all those. But some of our favorite matches are some that have never been on TV, that have only been on house shows.
Yeah.
Because on TV, you know, if you're on TV, you get you only get a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
You got to fit it in 10 minutes or 15 minutes, you know. And but at house shows, a lot of times you've just gone, you know, gone 20, 25 minutes or whatever you've gone because you've been allowed to, you know. And, and your hands aren't tied. And, you know, sometimes those are my favorite matches, you know. So. Man, I can't say my favorite. I saw some stand out. I remember one time, real quick, we were at we were on a tour in Europe, and this is when a tornado went off. Well, not tornado, the volcano went off, like in Iceland.
That's
or whatever.
Right, yeah.
And we couldn't fly back. Both tour, SmackDown and Raw, were in Europe, and we couldn't fly home. We were stuck, and we couldn't fly at all. So we were still hitting major towns in different countries by bus.
Mm-hmm.
So we were on buses for 28 hours, you know, or, you know, we'd leave one town after the show and stay on the bus until the showtime of the next
show, right.
Night. So that's what happened. So we were going to, like, Levin, France. First time we'd ever been there. I believe that's the name. If I'm saying it wrong, then I apologize. Mm-hmm. But the show's supposed to start at 7. It was the first time we're there. Sold-out place. We can't cancel. We're still an hour and a half away, and you're on the bus going, okay, we're not gonna make this. And they're saying, okay, and we have to be out of the arena by a certain amount of time because the ferries closed down to go to Scotland,
yes,
the next country. So we only had a certain amount of time in there. So we gotta get out of here. So next thing you know, the bus pulls over, and my agent, whoever it was, you know, Dean or Fit, goes, okay, Chavo, Evan, and a trainer and the ref. Get your stuff and go outside. We're like, what are we talking about? So all of a sudden, a police escort and a little, Mercedes minivan pulls up. We're in Europe, so it's Mercedes minivan as opposed to a Mazda. We pull up and they go, get in the car. You guys are going to be the first match. Just go until we get there. All right. So they speed off, and we're going 100 miles an hour, 115 miles an hour to get to France because the bus wasn't going to make it on time. So we speed and we get there. We changed it in. We changed in the car. As soon as we got there, we went on, and you know, of course, the show started probably 45 minutes late. So we get there, and they said, "Just keep going until
somebody comes.
Until the bus comes. Until we tell you stop." So me and Evan went. We probably went 40 minutes, you know, and we're in just killing it, you know. And
yeah.
You know Evan Bourne, he's like, "There's nobody like Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio is a one and the only.
Yeah.
And no one will ever be like him." And I get so pissed off when everybody says, oh, he's the next Rey Mysterio.
Yeah,
no,
one of a kind.
There's one Rey Mysterio. Well, Evan is the closest thing to it.
Yeah.
And I'm not joking. That guy's awesome. He can do so many different things. And so we got in the ring. We just had great chemistry. And, you know, he was such a great student, if you want to call it. Just really let me call everything and go for it and just reacted so good. And we went like 40 minutes. And so finally, they're like, okay, the bus is here. We can take it home. So we end up taking it home, finishing up. And all the rest of the matches went like 5 minutes, you know,
that's right,
you know,
yeah.
8 minutes. You know, John Cena, the champ, comes out, and he goes, there's going like 7 minutes. Because we had to go. We had to
leave. Yeah, you got to split. Yeah, that's
it. That was definitely one of them. But you have time for another one real quick?
You lay it on me, man.
Okay, so here's another one. First time, really, really the first time Raw is going back to Mexico City. In
right.
a long time.
Yes.
So they add me and Rey Mysterio had a big feud at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they add me and Rey from the SmackDown crew, SmackDown wrestlers, to the Raw show. To you know, for the same people.
Right.
So Booker T, being the awesome guy that he is, he pulls Vince McMahon aside and he goes, "Hey, I think he's not even on the show. He's on SmackDown. This mm-hmm. is a Raw show." He mm-hmm. goes, "I think Chavo and Rey should be the main event." And
wow,
yep, you're right. You know what? You're right. So for 2 weeks before this, we're the main event. We're the main event. We're the main event. And sure enough, the day before we leave, Johnny Ace calls me and says, "Hey, okay, man, you guys are the main event, so we really need you to tear it down." I say, "Yeah, no problem. We get to the show, and now we're the match before intermission.
Hmm.
And I'm like, okay, what's going on with this? So Art explains it a little bit to me and basically says, "Hey, you know, guys, you know, they it's a Raw show. We can't have, you know, the champion, whoever, I think John Cena was the champion at the time, can't be the...
And this is in Mexico, you know, City, basically home of Rey Mysterio and your lineage.
Yeah, I mean, lineage. So we can't have him not be the main event. And I'm like, all right, if you want to call that, okay, whatever, that's cool. So me and Rey, I look at Rey, and I said, that's it, bro, we're stealing it. And he looked at me and goes, yep. So all right, so we go out there right before the main event, and I'm right before intermission, and it's probably like the fourth match or fifth match.
Yeah.
In the front row is all their stars, Ultimo Dragon, all of them wearing masks and suits, you know, Ultimo Dragon,
cool.
Hijo de Santo, you know, Fantasmo, you know, Pinche Ghost, all those guys, all those guys are right there in the front row, man, and they're all watching us. So I come out, you know, I'm the heel, you know, they blew the heck out of me, it was awesome. Ray comes out, and he comes out with the headdress, the Aztec headdress, the whole thing, and I'm like, you son of a bitch. They're going crazy for him. Well, it was just one of those nights, bro. And in Mexico City, you know, it's very thin air. It's a mile up. You have no air. So some of you blow up really fast. You get tired really fast. Well, it's just one of those nights, you know, stars all aligned right.
Yeah.
And, you know, God bless this man. And me and Ray tore it down, bro. We tore it down. We went probably 25 minutes. And this is the first time these people were so alive. It was crazy. So as we get done, we come to the curtain. Everybody's watching. Everybody's clapping. Val Venus, all the fans, all the
everyone
the
backstage, like, all the boys.
They're going, oh, my God, what a match. That was incredible. What a match. Wow, that was so good. Except for John Cena was the main event. He was the main event. He didn't say a word to us.
Yeah.
Because we thought, of course... So when we came through, we were like, you know, me and Ray were like, hey, follow that one, MFers. You know? We actually, you know that, you know, follow that. You don't want to put us in the main event? Okay, follow it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, DX was on the show, and they never said, they didn't say a word to us.
Typical.
Not one word. Not like, hey, good job. Hey,
yeah.
No, not one word. Not even, hey, how was it out there? Nothing. Just a total ignore.
Yeah,
I
typical.
I was like, you know what? Stick it up your ass, bro. I don't really care. At that time, I was like, you know, if anybody can follow it, you guys can follow it. You guys are so freaking good and so over. And don't even pull that BS at me that you guys are mad. You're mad now all of a sudden that we tore it down for these people? We're not tearing it down just to shove it in your face. We're tearing it down for these fans and giving them what they want.
That's right.
That's what we're doing. Well, then the only one of them, like the main event guy, you know, was Edge. Edge was in the main event against John Cena.
Mm-hmm.
And, bro, and Edge pull us aside and was like, oh my God, that was one of the best matches I've ever seen. You guys were tearing, wow. And, you know, Edge being the guy that he is, I was like, man, brother, they go that, you know, and I was good friends with him before. I became really good friends with him and got a whole new respect for that guy. And, of course, he went down and tore it down.
Right.
In the main event. He went down and tore it down because that's the kind of guy he knows what a performer he is and how good he can be out there, you know? And there was no need for it, you know, but we were like, I really don't care, whatever, I don't really care. So the next night we were in Guadalajara, and we were at Vicente Fernandez, his big arena there, right?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, Arn goes, hey, Chavo, Ray, can I talk to you guys? I'm like, all right, are we in trouble? So I put the gorilla face on, I went into that office thinking I was going to fight Arn Anderson. No joke. I thought that if he was going to yell at us for tearing the house down, I was going to freaking punch him in the face. I'm not kidding you, bro. I was.
Oh, I know. I know, dude. I know your temper.
I was staring right at him, and he goes, hey, boys, just, you know, Arn. Hey, boys, just want to let you know, maybe I didn't make myself clear yesterday. The only reason you guys went to the main event was because, and he explained it to me really good and all that type of stuff, and I was like, oh, okay, Arn, no problem. So I was thrown off, you know. I didn't know which Arn I was going to get, you know.
Yeah.
I was kind of thrown off, kind of like, oh shit, you know. And if you know Arn,
he's
not going to lay. He's country. He's not going to lay down.
He can be a mean dude when he wants to be.
He's a tough guy. He really is. One hand or not, he's not going to lay down for anybody.
That's right.
So I didn't know, you know. So, and afterwards, I felt good, okay. And after it came out, Ray looks at me, and you know, Ray's such a nice guy. He's a big guy. He looks at me, and goes, You were ready to go, huh? And I said, was it that obvious? And he says, yeah, I know you. And if anybody knows this, Ray does. He looked at me and was like, yeah, I could tell. So we were like, I was like, yeah, well, hey, you know, I stood up for what I believed in, you know. Compassion is what it's called. Compassion.
Yes. Latino yeah. heat, man. Well, like you said, the politics of wrestling will never go away. But Eddie himself told me this, that he said his dad told him, you know, the cream always rises to the top and the marquee says wrestling. And if you can wrestle, you'll always have
that's
a
right.
job and you'll always do good. And that's something I learned from the Guerreros and I learned from you. And like I said, man, I just had the best time talking with you today. We've been through all the gamuts of emotions, man. But you're my brother. You always have been. And you know I love you, man. I'm really happy that we got to do this today.
Bro, I appreciate it, bro. It was such an awesome time connecting with you, man, and talking old times. And it kind of feels like old times, man. And
it does.
You know, I love you, man, with all my heart, brother. You're a brother from a different mother. You really are. You really are, man. And you know, I'm so glad that you're, you know, doing what you're doing and chasing it. And you know, you're an inspiration to a lot of the wrestlers, bro. You really are. And to me, you know, I do look up to you, man. And not, you know, you're not kissing your butt. Like, I really do. You know, I just want to jump into a jacuzzi with you and throw in a toaster or something.
We got a whole other – that's a whole other episode we can do, man. And, hey, we're business partners now, man. So it's great to talk to you, like I said, Chavs, and I'll be talking to you soon, all right?
For sure, for sure. All right, brother.
All right,
love
buddy.
You, man. To all the fans out there, hey, viva la raza. Thanks for supporting the Guerrero family and Chavo. There's a whole lot more coming my way and your way.
All right, I'm still going to answer one of your questions coming up, but first – have you checked out DDP Yoga yet? Huh? If you haven't, you need to. I'm telling you, I've used this for the last 2 years, and it's changed my life. That is no joke. I had very bad back problems, herniated discs, couldn't bend over, couldn't sneeze, couldn't do anything, couldn't pick up a piece of paper off the floor, and DDP Yoga came in and saved my life. I'm telling you need to try this. It's going to make you healthier and going to make achieving your fitness goals for 2014 even easier. DDP is a proven workout program that has changed the lives of thousands around the world. I am one of them, with a workout plan dedicated to building strength and developing a healthy lifestyle. And now it's being offered to listeners of Talk is Jericho at a discounted rate. So here's what you get with DDP Yoga: a grid chart to plan your workouts, a nutrition guide, and a reference poster with the 12 core positions that make up the DDP Yoga workout. The Max Pack includes 15 workouts that anyone at any level can perform and see results with. You can even download your workouts for exercising on the go. I use DDP wherever I am, in my hotel room, in a dressing room, on the tour bus. It's that easy. No more searching the city to find a gym. No more having to worry about getting in your car and driving around. You can do DDP Yoga wherever you are. So go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of a special offer only available to listeners of my show. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho, J-E-R-I-C-H-O, to get this deal. But you better do it now, because this special offer is only available for a limited time. Thanks again to Chavo Guerrero. An amazing interview and very emotional, but such a great friend and my brother. Really interesting conversation about Chris Benoit and the last few days of his life. I am really interested in the whole brain concussion tau explanations and the reasons that that make people do very crazy, strange things. And I'm going to have on the show in a few weeks Chris Nowinski from the Sports Legacy Institute. He was an ex-WWE wrestler that had to retire because of a concussion and started this amazing foundation, this amazing research group that has revolutionized the studies of concussions in athletes. So look forward to that, and look forward to your questions, as I always do. For the first time ever, instead of taking questions from at Talk is Jericho on the Twitter, I took questions live on the phone. I'm going to do that again this week. It worked out so well. I'm going to take Will's call first and foremost. Hello, Will. How you doing?
Hi, Chris.
Hey, where are you from, Will?
I'm in Kingston, Ontario.
Fellow Canadian, eh? That's pretty cool, eh?
Exactly, eh?
All right, man. What's your question?
Well, actually, I've been listening to the podcast a lot on the treadmill lately.
Okay.
At the gym, trying to keep working out during these awful Canadian winters.
Right.
So the podcast has been great for that. I'm just wondering, you know, when you're not really feeling up to it or you have to dig down a little deep, what you use for inspiration or what you key in on to keep yourself going?
Well, first of all, thanks for calling in. It's interesting how podcasts have revolutionized people in the gym or people traveling on the train, on a car. It's gives you kind of something to focus on while you're doing it. But for me, inspiration in the gym or to do yoga, it basically is just how my body feels, to be honest with you. And actually looking in the mirror, I kind of have a pretty strict diet and a pretty strict workout regimen, which is mostly based around yoga, DDP yoga, which I talk about all the time. I just did talk about it. And if I feel that I'm getting a little bit lumpy or soft, that gives me more inspiration. If my body is hurting me, that gives me inspiration to get in there. So I think that's the best inspiration is just how you feel about yourself when you look in the mirror. And if you're feeling a little bit chubby or a little bit soft, wear a really super tight shirt around the house that doesn't quite fit, and it'll get so annoying that you want to get in the gym and work out even more so. So I think it's basically just based on your own perceptions and your own feelings.
Great.
Cool, man. Well, good luck, and thanks for listening.
Great. Thanks, Chris.
All right, next we got Andrew on the line. How are you doing, Andrew?
Doing good, sir. How are you doing?
Good, man. Where are you from?
San Antonio, Texas.
All right, Texas. I love San Antonio, Texas. What's going on? What's your question, my friend?
I just got a question. I've always wondered, like, between you and Chris and Rey Mysterio, y'all's matches are just so fluid and perfect. And, like, at the Bash and Extreme, it was like, how do you make that chemistry with Rey Mysterio? I think he's very underrated in the history of wrestling.
Well, yeah, Rey is one of the guys that everybody loves working with because he's so so easy, so amazing, and so innovative. I mean, he's older now, as we all are, but when I first saw him in 95, he was like a real-life superhero, actually in 94 maybe. He was like a real-life superhero that I'd never seen do some of the things that he'd done. And being so small, I mean, people used to laugh at him when he came in the dressing room for the first time because they couldn't believe that this little guy was going to be in the ring. But then he'd get in there and just blow your mind. He was like a Jackie Chan or something, the stuff he could do that no one else could ever do, which is why I wanted to work with him in 2009. I wrote a really long chapter about it in my new book discussing the angle that we had, the feud that we had. The matches we had are some of my favorites of my career. Definitely one of my favorite all-time opponents. And I think we also came through the same system from Japan to Mexico through ECW and WCW. We really knew each other well and knew a lot of tricks that other guys didn't know because we had the experience using kind of the Mexican tricks and some of the Japanese things we used to do. So I can't ever think of a bad match that I had with Rey or even one that wasn't very, very good. Definitely one of my all-time favorite opponents.
I can't think of one either, but thanks for answering the question.
No problem, Andrew. Thank you for listening.
I try to emulate you guys and me and my friends at Backyard Wrestling at ESW. So you guys are legends, man.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for the podcast. Love it.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Remember, do not try this at home. Only listen at home. Listen to Talk is Jericho. That was a great segue. I appreciate you calling in. I shot out the number on the Twitter, and I was scared that I'd be sitting there with crickets and no one would call. But instead, it was lots of calls on the phone. Lots of calls on the phone. Anyways, thank you for listening to my senseless bantering. And thank you for clicking on that Amazon banner every time you shop online. When you link to Amazon through Talk is Jericho, remember, Amazon gives back a little something to the show so I continue to do this show for you for free. I got a cowbell in here. Cowbells aren't free. Had to pay for it with something, people. People! This lets me do this show for you. I love to do it, but give me some love. Give me some help. Go to podcastone.com. Click on Talk is Jericho, then hit that Amazon link. You get all the great Amazon prices and service. There's no hidden fees or charges. You don't have to do a thing. You just help out Talk is Jericho in the process. Thank you so much for listening this week. We'll be back for another show on Wednesday. God bless you all. Stay cool, stay hard, stay heavy, stay hungry. We'll see you soon. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Talk is Jericho. Don't forget, every Wednesday there's a brand new episode of Talk is Jericho at podcastone.com.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors and shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to GEICO, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to GEICO could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo!
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Syria Peace Talks? I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. Syrian rebels have rejected peace talks being proposed by Russia. They're accusing Moscow of failing to pressure its ally, President Bashar Assad, to end the conflict. Christmas may be over, but the shopping isn't. Hazel Ginn was at Macy's Herald Square in New York today.
It's not too bad. Even we went up to the 9th floor, and we managed to get in a queue of about 4 deep, so not bad. Yeah, and then we went to another one, and it was only a couple, so we kind of timed it well, I think.
America's research group, which focuses on consumer behavior, projects holiday sales up about 5% this year. Harley-Davidson is placing a renewed emphasis on teaching people to ride as part of its efforts to attract more customers. The company is expanding the number of dealerships with a Harley Riding Academy. The move comes as the industry grapples with years of declining sales and an aging customer base. I'm Ben Thomas.